All right, welcome to the Buckets of Dice podcast. I'm Alex.
I'm Dan Real.
And today we're going to be talking about Warhammer 40K, how to start it, and just the company Games Workshop. So, yeah.
For those of you who don't know us, which is pretty much everyone because this is our first episode, I'm Dan. I'm absolutely poor. I like talking, so I figured a podcast would be great. I've been playing war games for, 5, 10 years? No, 5, 6 years? Words. And I suck at words, just so you know.
Yeah, I'm Alex. I've been playing a long time, but I play different games, tabletop war, RPG, that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
So. Alright, so, Warhammer 40K, for now.
So, for the few of you who don't know what Warhammer 40K is, let's go into a brief introduction to the game. It takes place in the grim, dark, far future of the 41st millennium, where, humanity is basically on the brink of extinction.
Which is great. Anyway, essentially, it's a science fiction tabletop war game. It has a bunch of history. It's got very colorful characters. Certain authors are really great. Other authors are piss poor. And it's one of the most popular tabletop war games out there right now.
Yeah, I mean. We've been playing for a while. I've been playing for, 7 years, maybe. It's probably the game I play the most out of all other war games.
And, I'm more into the painting side, but I also play, quite a bit. Not too terrible.
Yeah, I'm usually
we represent the two different sides of the gamer.
To an extent.
to an extent.
So anyway, let's get into Warhammer 40K. So, talk about factions first, I guess?
There's 15 or so?
There's a bunch of them. I'm just gonna go down the list here. You have your... these are the ones off the Games Workshop website. You've got your Adeptus...
Right, so, we should probably start off with that, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
Warhammer 40K, amongst, there are three games that, I suck at this. pardon me,
it's
this is my first
episode,
time doing
don't worry
this.
About it.
Yeah. Games Workshop is who publishes Warhammer 40K, Warhammer Fantasy, which we'll be covering later on, and then The Hobbit and, Lord of the Rings Fantasy Battles, I believe it's called?
Yes. Warhammer Fantasy
which will
Battles.
Also, which we'll probably also be covering later on. Of course, we don't play the latter two, so you'll have to excuse us for anything we don't know, but we'll do our research.
Yeah.
They're a very big company, because they do have the most popular games out there. Except they've made a couple poor marketing decisions in their time.
Yeah, I heard a lot of stuff going on with that.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts. Like, from a consumer point of view, they are really terrible, but from a from a company point of view, they're a genius.
I will say though, just something going for them, best customer service ever. Like, you're missing a few pieces. Sometimes you can call the company; they'll send you a whole new kit. They're pretty good with that.
Well, so what you're saying is when I order a. Large kit and it comes with one less thing, I just call them and say yo, missed a shoulder pad. Send me a new one.
Yeah, sometimes. Well, sometimes I've heard stories where people didn't even need to send the kit back and everything, or they just replace it pretty quickly. Anyway, so that part of the company is pretty good. They get back to you pretty quickly. Recent news, though, their stock dropped 25%. You heard about
that? They got a stock?
Yeah, Games Workshop. It's a stock share company. which I'm not a business major or anything like that. I have no knowledge of business, so I'm just going off what I hear on the internet.
Wow.
Yeah.
But, yeah, what was it? NASDAQ's up 14 yesterday. Dow Jones is down like 35 or something like that.
I don't know what that means, but okay.
Neither do I, but apparently it's got something to do with the entire stock market.
I just know that over the last like quarter or some, or last 6 months, Games Workshop stock dropped like 25%, and they lost like 30% in revenue or something like that.
Mm.
So it's definitely starting to show whatever... some of the decisions that they're making. Although I did hear that that's they're consolidating a lot of stuff. So, like,
yeah.
Trying to fuse Forge World, Games Workshop, Black Library under one thing. So, yeah.
Not sure how that's going to affect the Forge World and Black Library, which we'll get to very soon.
Yeah, we will. For
those
of you who don't know, Forge World and Black Library are subsidiary companies of Games Workshop. Forge World focuses on, like, really good detail resin models and, like, all the bigger stuff like Titans, Apocalypse, and everything. Black Library deals with, like, books and, like, story and that kind of stuff.
So. Yeah, which we Wargamers call fluff.
Yeah.
Because it's like the stuff that we stick in the middle just to make, you know, the game a bit more fleshy.
I will say this about Warhammer 40K. Some of the... I pretty much exclusively read 40K books right now because a lot of them are just really good. I love the background of Warhammer 40K, even though 95% of it is taken from, like... other places, but...
Yeah, I've read a single book, and it was a very good book. I'm not gonna say it's the best book I've ever read, because it's certainly not. But it's really good. It's definitely up there.
Yeah.
So,
anyway.
Back to the game. Warhammer 40K allows you to pick an army to represent. So you buy a bunch of models, you buy the codex... You buy all sorts of stuff, you assemble them, paint them up, or whatever, throw them on a table in a somewhat organized fashion, and pretend you know what you're doing. Then someone teaches you the game, and you get really good.
Yeah.
So those armies are the Adeptus
Sororitas.
Already screwing up.
Adeptus Sororitas. They're also known as Sisters of Battle, for the most part. They're, basically female space marines, except not genetically enhanced. They're the... Church and that organization of the Imperium, which is the main faction in the Warhammer 40K universe.
Yeah.
So you got the Imperium, and then you got like all the other races and everything.
The Chaos. The Tau Empire, mm-hmm. Necrons.
Yeah.
We'll get to them.
Yeah. So the Adeptus Sororitas are the Church, basically the Ecclesiarchy. Next up, we have the Blood Angels, which are a Space Marine chapter. Oh, you got
they're
yeah.
They are so special that they have their own codex and they have their own models. Basically, if all of the Space Marines were berserkers that also were very religious, you'd get the Blood Angels.
Yeah, Blood Angels are fast Space Marines. Very fast space marines. I think all the vehicles are fast, too.
Yeah, and they've also got some of the strongest units for space marines. Like, not even kidding. You know, so you might have to pay a few more points to get models on the table, but, you know, it's really, really worth it. And that's why there's, like, mostly Blood Angel players if you see a space marine army.
Mm. Yeah.
So, next up is the Chaos Demons.
Yes, and I like these guys, because you've got the four Chaos Gods who exist in an alternate dimension, which is known as the Warp, which is a reflection of the reality, and the four Chaos Gods are...
Five.
Four.
Well.
Four.
The fifth one kind of disappeared after no one knew who owned it.
Yeah. Basically what happened, there was a fifth Chaos God who represented Chaos's self-destructive side, but when the author left the company, or at least what I heard was, when the author left the company, their they didn't know who owned the rights, and they phased them out. But anyway, you got the four Chaos Gods, who are Khorne, God of Slaughter, Blood, that blood. Kind of stuff. And I know what you're thinking. It's spelled K-H-O-R-N-E, not K-C-O-R-N.
Or K-O-R-N, which is a band, which I have no opinion on. They're good, but not amazing, in my opinion. He had a lot of jokes, like milk for the cornflakes. Which hails from one of the battle cries, or two of the battle cries, Skulls for the Skull Throne and Blood for the Blood God.
Yeah.
You've
got Nurgle, who is the Chaos God of disease, decay, despair, plague, the three Ds.
Yeah. And plague.
Yeah. And plague. Well, disease. Same thing.
His nickname is Papa Nurgle because he's like...
He's very fatherly. He loves all his creations.
He's really like... You take anything that could potentially look grotesque on an alien or on a human or on an animal, and that's Nurgle.
Take a dead body, fuse it with like a fly or something, and then put it on a base, and you've got a Nurgle. Nurgling.
Yeah.
Alright, next up we have the Slaanesh, which is the Chaos God of like depravity, pleasure, hedonism, pain. That kind of stuff.
He's all about pink and black. He is one of his teachings, I believe, is pleasure in pain or pleasure in suffering or something like that. So you'll constantly see models with large gashes across various parts of their body, with really weird looks on their faces.
Yeah. And then you've got Tzeentch, which is my favorite god of...
Everything is going according to plan.
Yes, god of change, hope, or false
magic.
Hope, and magic and that kind of stuff.
Knowledge, stuff like that. Forbidden knowledge, I should say.
Yeah. And basically what demons are is they are the servants of those gods, so they embody like a faction of their creator or something, like
they're like the direct manifestations of exactly what that god is saying. So you see like a demon of Khorne, he's gonna have a lot of spikes and large teeth and bones, lots of bones. Just look at the bones.
Yeah. Demon of Nurgle is gonna be like a rotten zombie creature, but not really a zombie, just very impervious to pain and that kind of stuff. They're very hard to kill.
I learned that in my first game. I played against Chaos Space Marines of Nurgle, who are notoriously hard to kill. And that made me very displeased when I had to basically slog through a bunch of models, and most of my army died the first turn.
Yeah.
So, not very happy with the game then. But then I played against someone who was a bit more fair.
And then, Tzeentch was next, right? Yeah, and their demons do, like, a lot of magic and stuff. They're basically... some of the only shooting you're gonna get in this army, but
yeah, they also have a bunch of spellcasters that kind of look like crows, or various other animals. I think there's an alligator-headed one, kind of like the Egyptian gods, but
well, I think it's mostly birds.
I thought there was a crocodile one though, or an alligator. Whatever. I didn't look at the teeth.
I don't know. Maybe.
Now, also something to note, Chaos Demons also appear in Warhammer Fantasy, and the models are very much interchangeable.
The models are exactly the same, only difference is the bases, which you can easily model it so you can use both bases. Magnetization or pinning or something like that, if you want to play both games, all you need to learn is like both rule sets.
Yeah. So next up is the Chaos Space Marines.
Yes.
Go
ahead.
Go on.
Alright. Well, these are basically Chaos Marines who have been corrupted by one or all of the four Chaos Gods. And it's pretty much the same as the demons, only they're space marines, not demons, and they have access to different war machines and stuff.
Now, also, one of the fluff things is, since there's no time in the warp, and you can spend as much time in the warp as you want and come out seconds later after you enter, essentially, every single Chaos Space Marine is a veteran because he's had thousands of years of training.
Well, they do make new Chaos Space Marines occasionally.
Well, yes.
But it's not as common as new Space Marines.
Right, but the thing is, if you make a new Space Marine, a Chaos Space Marine, throw him into the warp for 1,000 years, have him pop out a couple seconds later, and now he's battle hardened and a veteran and all that crap. Hellfire and brimstone, stuff like that.
Yeah, well, they have to withstand the warp, which, like, corrupts everything it touches, and sometimes to the extent where it basically just kills whoever is exposed to it.
Mutates.
Yeah. There are stories like if you look in directly into the warp, you go insane, that kind of stuff. So,
which oddly enough is exactly what most librarians do. Librarians are a unit that Space Marines and Imperial Guard and stuff like that have, that are basically the spellcasters who also do other things like divination, stuff like that. So basically what they do is stare right into the warp and challenge it with their mind and say, I see you, and I know what you're trying to do to me, but oh god, demons.
Yeah. So those are the Chaos Space Marines. Next up we have the Dark Angels, which are another chapter of Space Marines. There's a few of them. And the Dark Angels are kind of like very religious, like a very dark, like brooding chapter. They've got a secret past that they don't want other people to find out about how their entire, or most of their legion almost went to Chaos, and their whole thing is they're hunting down the Chaos Space Marines who used to be from their legion. So, yeah.
Yeah, they are the... Like, if you are obsessed with revenge, or vengeance, or stuff like that, go Dark Angels.
Yeah.
Because that will sate your thirst for revenge, ever so slightly. Also, something to note really quick. Chaos Space Marines and Dark Angels have their own introduction set called Dark Vengeance. Now, really quick, it's a really good way to get into the game. It's $100, which may seem like a lot, but compared to actually having to spend almost 3 times as much to actually get into the game, you know, if you want to play Chaos Space Marines or Dark Angels, pick up Dark Vengeance.
And we'll be getting as it comes. We'll be reviewing this later on in the podcast.
I'll shut up.
No, I'm just saying it's basically the starter kit for Warhammer 40K. It's a definite thing you should buy if you're already in the hobby or if you're going to go into the hobby. It's definitely something that is worth the price, but we'll talk about that later.
Yep. Right. We did a lot of research into that.
Yeah.
So, hopping down now, we go to the Dark Eldar and subsequently the Eldar. We're just going to do both of them at the same time because it will confuse people if we don't.
Sounds good.
Now, the Eldar are space elves. They are frail, shooty ninja space elves. They have hover bikes, or jet bikes rather. They've got all sorts of really cool magic techno stuff. And Dark Eldar are just the darker, more...
They don't have magic
versions.
Or psychers. Well, in Warhammer, yeah. It's called psychic powers, not magic, but it's basically the same thing.
It just doesn't want to admit that it's magic. It's like, you know, how when Harry Potter first came out, the Christian church was just like, nope, we don't want anything to do with magic. Well, yeah, that's what they want to do with this. It's called psychic powers.
Yeah. Anyway, the Eldar are... They're also very fast. Dark Eldar are even faster. And their army is just basically around not getting hit versus actually taking damage. Because some of the vehicles will die as soon as you spit in their general direction. But they're very fast, and they hit really hard. The entire armies...
Yeah.
Both armies can basically be summed up as glass cannons, but Eldar have actually gotten a lot better with the new book.
Yeah, they also have a bunch of powers that help them survive a slight, like, a turn longer, maybe.
Well, yeah. If you're playing competitively, you're probably going to be taking Eldar, or a detachment of Eldar with your army.
Yeah, their psychic powers are really nuts, and if you are playing competitively and you don't have Eldar, you better have a way to get rid of Eldar.
Yeah. Next up are the Grey Knights, which are another Space Marine chapter, and they're basically, like, the best of the best of the Space Marine chapters.
Each one of them is a Psyker.
Mm-hmm.
That's something to know. They all have magic powers, except the Grunts usually are only able to use the psychic power that is a psychic hammer of some description.
Yeah.
Now, funny thing, remember how we mentioned the warp a couple minutes ago? Well, their chapter master, a guy by the name of Kaldor Drago...
Who doesn't exist.
He doesn't exist, but he does. He exists in the warp. He was cast off into the warp for some reason, and for another reason that I still haven't figured out, even though I have played Grey Knights for a couple months now, he cannot leave the warp unless his Grey Knights are fighting against Chaos Demons. And once the last Chaos Demon is killed, he gets sent flying back into the warp.
Yes.
Now, he is apparently the strongest Space Marine to ever exist besides the Emperor, because he's able to brave the warp in body, mind, and soul without being mutated whatsoever.
Which, of course, goes against everything in the story, so if you're like me and play by the story and all that stuff, if you're a fluff player like me, you're going to be ignoring this guy completely.
And if you're not, you're going to be fielding him every single time.
Yes, because he's incredibly annoying to fight on the tabletop.
I dropped him on a tabletop once against Alex, and he literally ran up, smacked around a bunch of Alex's orcs, and then just laid waste to the entire table in a couple turns.
Yeah,
it was a very small battle, but it was still absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
Of course, he costs a lot of points to do so.
He takes out many more points, though. And another reason why I hate him and have a vendetta against it. But, anyway. Yeah. So, those are the
Imperial Guard.
Yes.
So next is the Imperial Guard.
Mm-hmm.
They are humans. They are the epitome of human.
Yes.
They're fleshy, they're squishy, they are cannon fodder, they die in 1 to 2 hits, but they've got really big tanks that are really hard to destroy.
They're basically the average human in the galaxy, given a gun and sent off to fight demons and orcs.
They have
guns? Well, whatever. Yes, though.
They've got flashlights.
Yeah.
Really angry flashlights.
Yes, there's a running joke in Warhammer 40K that... The Laz gun is a small caliber weapon, or laser weapon, that fires a solar-powered laser at an enemy that can pierce through basically the best body armor that we have in modern day, easily, but it is one of the worst weapons in the game, and so everybody calls them flashlights.
Yeah, and then the absolutely common joke that everyone has heard that I'm not even going to try and deliver correctly. What do you call a twin-linked lasgun?
Lasgun with a laser pointer.
Oh, that's what it was, yeah. I said it backwards,
yes,
of course.
I always do.
I just happen to do that. I suck at this.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
I'm a terrible teller of jokes. But besides that, the Imperial Guard are actually a formidable army as long as you have them in a tank or two.
See, the thing with the Imperial Guard is that you either... there are two army styles. You either have waves upon waves of expendable infantry, or you have waves upon waves of massive tanks. And
the latter being the more popular one because it's more survivable.
Yes. And the latter one also has a little bit of infantry that are veterans, and that also ride in tanks. But anyway... Yes, those are the two main competitive builds for Imperial Guard that I've seen.
And then everything else just dies.
Yeah.
Unless you got a vendetta. which is, I believe it's called the Vendetta, correct?
Yeah, there's the Valkyrie and Vendetta, which are dropships.
Oh, I'm thinking of the Valkyrie, sorry.
Yeah.
I thought it was the only V dropship, so. No, the Valkyrie. It's really not something you want to fight against really, you know, really early on.
Yeah.
You need to know how to take it down and stuff like that. It's just a nightmare.
Yeah.
It's almost as bad as Lord Caldor Drago.
Alright, so next up we have the Necrons, which are soulless automata. Basically, imagine an army full of Terminator. Yeah.
Oh yeah, the Terminator, not the like...
Well, yeah, because they're in the game, there's suits called Terminator Armor, so those of you who know what I'm talking about, Terminator Armor, we're talking about Terminator, the old movies with, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger and that kind of stuff. Imagine an army of those robots.
Pardon snoring in the background. One of us is living with a roommate.
Oh, you can hear that?
Yeah, I can just barely hear it.
Okay.
I don't know if it'll come out, so... If it does come out, just imagine.
Yeah. Anyway.
Or if it doesn't.
Yeah.
But Necrons...
Anyway.
Neither of us know much about them because we actually have never really played them.
I played against them once.
Huh?
I have an army of them. I know.
Oh, you do?
Quite a bit about them. Yes.
Oh. I didn't know this. You never told me this. You lied to me.
Yes, they were basically built to be Terminators. I mean, in the older rulebook, they even had a rule called "We'll Be Back." But anyway, they have the same stats as like a normal Space Marine. They're elite, or almost the same stats. They're pretty tough troops, and they actually have a chance of regenerating when they die. So the troops are a little more expensive point wise, but they can get
they're
back
more
up.
Survival.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's fun.
Also, you know, they are very much robots, so, like, their dropships will have a bunch of Necrons kind of folded up in, like, a sleep mode hanging out of them.
Yeah.
And they've got a bunch of various really weird robotic beasts, like, was it the Crypt Crawl or something like that?
The Cryptek? Oh, no, the Cryptek is the commander of those. They've got the Tomb Spider, the,
That's
Wraith,
probably what I was thinking of.
Canoptic Wraiths, and Canoptic Spiders... Basically,
yeah. The Canoptic Spider is really nuts.
The whole thing.
I'm taking a look at it right now.
Yeah, the whole thing with the Necrons is that they ruled the galaxy 60 million years before humanity evolved, and they basically wiped out most of the life in the galaxy for their gods, the Catan. They then turned on the Catan, who had granted them immortality at like a cost to their souls. So they turned on the Catan and went into hibernation until the galaxy basically repopulated. So, yeah.
Now, something to note, which I find really funny, is they went to hibernation in the middle of a desert, which then swallowed them up for most of eternity. And then later, some space marines were exploring their home world. And
it wasn't
they
just
see
one
this
desert.
One...
It was, they have these places well, called tomb worlds, which are...
Well, yeah, but like... Yeah, they've got a bunch of them, but, you know, it's just in a desert, right? So, you know, they decide, oh, this is the best place to go to sleep. So, these Space Marines are adventuring around, find a few slumbering Necrons, accidentally wake them up and unleash this absolutely terrible thing on the rest of the universe. And they don't fess up to the fact that they did this.
Sanctuary 101 is the first recorded assault by Necrons, where basically, a Necron tomb woke up on the planet of Sanctuary 101, which was home to the Sisters of Battle, and killed everybody on the planet.
Yep, and the
there was
Sisters
no
of Battle,
transmission
the Space Marines.
Or anything. No,
huh?
No news. They basically arrived to find a lifeless planet, and Necrons had disappeared. So nobody knew what happened, but that was the first incident of a Necron incursion. Anyway,
now
yeah,
these
Necrons are badass.
The Necrons also have laser weapons, but they're much more effective than laser guns.
Yes, they have Gauss rifles, which
it's more plasma than laser, though, isn't it?
Yeah, they're called Gauss rifles, but they're not Gauss weaponry, like what we know. They're weapons. Basically, if the beam hits a target, it'll strip it like molecule by molecule until it gets flayed alive. Basically, very painful.
It's a really like, a lot of people have done effects of this, and it's a really cool effect.
Yeah.
But,
they're also one of the top tier armies, or they used to be, in the tournament scene, but I'm not sure.
Until the new Codex nerfed them.
Yeah, a little bit. Anyway.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Next is Orcs.
My army. My favorite.
One of the more iconic factions.
They are what you expect from, like, World of Warcraft and other games like that. They are the green-skinned brutes, basically. They are, what is it, intelligent, ape-like mushroom people.
Yes.
Yes.
When they die, they spout out these spores that turn into other orcs that eventually grow up and then become big orcs and decide to chop faces off.
Yeah, orcs grow from spores. They loot technology from everybody else, so all their stuff is built of, like, scrap metal, kind of like post-apocalyptic theme vehicles, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and it's, you know, their fluff is funny. That's one of the main reasons people play them. Not because they're a really, you know, they're a pretty good army, but because of their fluff.
They're the comic relief hilarious. Of the 41st. I mean, I love, there was one story in the Orc Codex, which, like, yeah, I forget the war boss's name, but he goes into the warp. He leads his army into the warp and comes out of the warp at the just before he goes in. And so he comes out just before he goes in. He then hunts himself down so he can have a spare of his favorite gun. And he kills himself.
Yep. Now, another thing about the fluff is orcs don't invent things. They slap things together, believe it works, and it does. It's like orc magic.
Mm-hmm.
It's nuts.
They're...
Basically, you can give them a pipe with a trigger and a bunch of bullets, and say, this is a gun and it'll work. They will feed bullets into it and it will fire at a high rate of fire, and you'll just be completely dumbfounded that it actually worked.
Mm-hmm. Although, keep in mind with orcs, they are very much an assault army with your basic units. They do have some pretty good shooting, and it's more competitive to build a shooting style list, but orcs are very much, like, assault themed. Their guns are more like noisemakers than anything else. In the story, at least, they say their guns are more noisemakers than anything else. And a lot of their weaponry has a chance of blowing themselves up. So, very fun.
Right.
Why, I love them.
So, next up is the Space Marines. Yep. Now, we've been talking about them ever so slightly, but now we actually get into them because of alphabetic order. Space Marines are genetically engineered humans who were brought into being by this one godlike man who, you know, who everyone knows at the Elf Balls. Sorry about that. Cut that again. Oh, this phone. I hate it.
Mm-hmm.
What was I saying?
Space Marines.
Yeah, Space Marines. They were brought into being by the Emperor of Mankind. He is a godlike being who is an amazing psyker. He is really old and currently in a state of suspended life, if not death. We're not entirely sure. On this thing called this gigantic mechanism called the Golden Throne, which is literally designed to keep their god emperor in a state of near death. He cannot respond to outside stimulus. He cannot speak.
It's basically life support.
Yeah, except it's like if you see pictures of him, it's not life support. It's death support.
Mm.
But that's not what the Space Marines are all about. Oh wait, yeah, it is.
The Space Marines are basically the genetically altered superhumans. They're the last line of defense in the Imperium. The actual army Space Marines encompasses generic Space Marines, so you can make your own chapter. They have rules for some of the lesser-known chapters who don't get their own codex. But
or, you know, the famous one made famous by a really, in my opinion, bad author. I'm not going to say his name because we don't want to,
yeah,
you know, get sued.
It's the same guy who made Drago, basically.
Well, yeah, that's true.
The Ultramarines.
The Ultramarines. They are the Blue Marines. If you've ever seen a Space Marine army that's blue, chances are, it's not 100%, but chances are it was Ultramarines. They are the epitome of generic Marines.
Yeah.
They hit hard, they hit at the same exact speed as everything else, and yeah, that's it.
Space Marines are basically the army you will see most often when playing this game. They're the army which, if you're building a list, most people who build lists build them to fight Space Marines. Most things are compared to a generic Space Marine stats. They're really the foundation model for Warhammer 40K.
Yeah, and they're also the overall, quote-unquote, good guy. Now, they're not at all good guys.
No race in Warhammer is good.
Oh, well, we'll get to the one that's actually potentially the one that's actually good. But Space Marines are... how do I put this nicely? Self-absorbed, megalomaniac pricks.
Xenophobic. You forgot that.
Forgot xenophobic, right.
They're racist.
And... Yeah, they're racist. They're very much racist.
Against other races.
They're also chapterist, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
Because...
Well, inter-chapter rivalries and everything. One of the quotes... Or basically, so there are 1,000 known chapters of Marines. Each one of which has roughly 1,000 Marines in it. Give or take. Depending on their strength.
Right.
And so, yeah, there are some that are named, and many more that you can just make up.
Right. For example, when I first started off, I had the chapter called the Spectral Angels. They had a really poor paint job, and they had a really poor tactics scheme, but I loved them until I found the Firehawks, who are just better.
I'm just going to admit my first Space Marines were Ultramarines, and get over that shame. But anyway.
He went to the dark side really early on.
Actually, my first army was Tyranids. My first Space Marines were Ultramarines.
Let's not jump the metaphorical gun right now.
Okay, yeah. Anyway.
See, Tyranids, unfortunately, are the last.
Yeah, we'll get to them. Next up are the Space Wolves, which are the...
Drunken space werewolf people.
Vikings.
No,
yeah.
They're not werewolves.
They're Nordic...
Drunken Spain.
Themed Space Marines. Who drink?
They're drunk.
Drink a lot, feast a lot. They like fighting and like brawling, and they are basically werewolves. They don't turn into wolves, but they have like inhuman
wolf
senses
DNA.
And like wolf DNA. They call it the Canis Helix, which basically gives them similar senses to that of a wolf. Some of them ride wolves
giant
into battle.
Wolves.
Yeah.
It's like
they
fight alongside
wolves.
See, the fact that they ride giant wolves into battle kind of boggles the mind, seeing as a Space Marine weighs about, what was it, 2 tons?
Yes.
With all of his armor? It has to be a wolf capable of carting around easily 2 tons. So.
Well, yeah, the wolves that they ride into battle are called Thunder Wolves, and they're basically the size of, like, a battle tank. They're massive beasts that occupy... Their territory takes up a large area of their planet, known as Fenris. And actually, in Fenrisian, the name of the Space Wolves, which I use, is the Vilka Fenrika, which, yeah, means wolves of
Fenris.
Wolves of Fenris.
It's basically Russian.
Russian,
Nordic, or is it German?
Kind of, and a little bit of German.
Well,
yeah. Anyway, so those are the Space Wolves, and they're badasses. They all have... most of them have beards and stuff, and yeah.
Yeah, and also a bunch of the models have actual, like, beer mugs and stuff attached to their belts or in their hands.
I didn't see beer mugs. I have some of the models.
Really?
I've never seen beer mugs. I know they have a lot of, like...
Maybe it was a conversion gun.
like trinkets and like medallions, a lot of you know, like totems on them.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I remember seeing a bunch of models that actually had like, you know, frothing mugs of beer.
That might have been a
which
conversion.
Which was really funny. Yeah, it might have been a conversion, which is a very popular thing in this this hobby.
Yeah. Anyway.
Now, the second to last, but nowhere near second to worst, or second to best, whatever. No. This next army is called the Tau Empire. Now, the Tau are a fledgling race of blue equestrian-ish people who have no noses. Instead, they've got slits in their face. And they are shooting. They are very much shooting.
Yeah, their whole thing is their empire, the warriors of their empire see close combat as dishonorable or for lesser races. So,
right. And, yeah. You know, and also they are very, they fight for this thing called the greater good. Now, we've talked about the gods of chaos and the god emperor and the Catan, but the greater good is kind of like their deity, except it's not. It's an idea that they all fight towards. And they will always offer, like a new faction, the chance to join the greater good. Now, two of said factions have actually taken them upon that offer.
Oh, many more than two. It's just two in the book. In the story,
well, yeah,
there are
two,
more
two
than
in the book.
Most of them
are
lesser.
Yeah, but the two major ones are the Kroot and the Vespin. Now, we'll get to them in a second. But the Tau, they, you know, I'm looking at some of my Tau models now. They are essentially a Japanese fanboy's wet dream, I believe people have called it. They fight in giant mechs. They have lots of shooty, bright, shiny guns. They are very Japanese or Chinese, like samurai. They're all about honor. They have a caste system, all this stuff, right? They're very technologically advanced, and all sorts of really neat stuff. Of course, I play them because of one single model called Commander Farsight, but, you know, I'm not going to talk too much about that because I can talk for hours.
Yeah.
And we don't have hours.
Yeah.
So,
try to keep them in the time frame.
Yeah, no, anyway. I know. But they are very shooty. They don't like close combat, except for Commander Farsight, who actually has a sword. One of the very few models who does. If the only one. No, there's two. But anyway, the Kroot are kind of like space goblins, almost, or hobgoblins. They are very primal. They are, you know, they're not really spacefaring. They actually needed the Tau to go to space.
No, they are spacefaring. They're just not as technologically advanced, but they do have
like
some technology.
It's like if you take our rocket right now, like our space rocket, that's about where they were when the Tau helped and made them intergalactic.
Mm-hmm.
And the Vespid are
also, it should be said,
like
for crew
men.
Just before we get to the Vespid.
Oh yeah.
The entire race are basically mercenaries. I mean, you'll see in a lot of, like, the RPGs and stuff, Kroot mercenaries, they'll fight for whoever gives them what they want. Like, money or food or something like that. But they fight for the Tau Empire because the Tau Empire is there to basically pay them. But they'll fight for anybody who will.
Yeah. And the Vespid are these insect beings who nobody actually uses in the game.
They've got one unit in the book, and it's not very good.
They're what?
They've got one unit in the book, and it's not very good.
No, it's not at all. It's the fast attack, so they will jump forwards and hit things with their face. That's about it. Mm-hmm. They will fall as if you were swatting at an insect. They die really fast, and nine times out of ten, they will not reach the enemy. So nobody uses them.
Right.
So yeah.
So yeah.
Last.
That's
army?
That's the Tau. So next up we have
the last
Tyranids.
Which is Yeah. Tyranids are...
They're an extragalactic race of... For those of you who have played StarCraft, the Zerg were based off the Tyranids. For those of you who know...
StarCraft was based off of Warhammer 40K, but let's not get into that.
Well, for those of you who know Starship Troopers and stuff, they're the bugs, basically. They...
Yes, they consume everything that they see and use that to make more Tyranids.
Yes, they...
Or make better Tyranids.
Basically, they arrived in the galaxy in giant hive fleets. There are three hive fleets known so far. Leviathan, Behemoth, and Kraken. And they, that's believed to be just the Vanguard. These hive fleets comprised of billions of ships. And basically what happens is they'll enter a system, devour all biomass in the planet, and reduce all planets to lifeless husks. Then they'll use the biomass to create more Tyranids and move on to the next one.
Now, they also operate through a hive mind, which is basically all of their brains are connected psionically. So everyone thinks the same thing.
There are certain units called synapsis units who can think for themselves to an extent, but for the most part, it's all one mind, one organism.
Right, and if, like, rules-wise, if a certain group of non-synapse Tyranids are out of range of a synapse Tyranid unit, then they become mindless, and they just, you roll a die on a table and kind of run around, they just, run around and do what the table says. So it could be feed, which at which point they charge at the nearest enemy and get into close combat and try and eat their face, or hide... That's obvious, stuff like that.
Well, and it's worth noting right now that as of our recording this, Tyranids are the most recent released codex, so they just got updated. I'm not exactly sure how good it is. I've heard mixed things about it, but yeah, it's definitely worth taking a look at.
Yeah, if you're into that kind of stuff. Yeah. I thought I was, and then just never panned out. But like
Tyranids were my $100 with the guys. So, yeah.
So that's all the armies. Now, there are rules that you can apply to games. The one that's most popular is Apocalypse, which is basically you take as many models as you can possibly conceive, multiply it by 3, and put it on a table.
Yeah,
and that's an Apocalypse battle.
Apocalypse is basically, massive armies. You also have access to formations, titans, war machines, gigantic vehicles, that kind of stuff. And it's a supplement to Warhammer 40K.
Yeah. And, I played a couple of Apocalypse battles myself. The first one that I played was absolutely nuts. It was 9 people on each side, huddled around a 12-foot by 6-foot table?
Yeah, something like
that. Something like that. And it was just,
It was chaos.
I almost didn't have enough space to field all of my models.
We had a separate table, too, and it was just...
We had 2 different tables because of a certain rule where if you get to the center of the table, you get transported to the other table.
Mm-hmm.
It was crazy.
The whole thing was just this was just a massive game of, 20 people who were playing?
18. It was 18 10 people. On each side. It was 9 on each side.
Mm-hmm. And then, it was just... it was a disaster, but it was also amazing. It took like 7 hours to play. 7-8 hours.
Now, Forge World, that we mentioned earlier, I believe. Did we mention that earlier?
Yes, we did. I believe.
Yeah. Forge World puts out Titans, which are Apocalypse only, unless you use, what was it called, Escalation?
Yes.
Yeah, which is like a mini Apocalypse game.
Escalation basically are rule sets that allow you to use Titans and other super heavy war machines in Warhammer 40K games.
Now,
a lot of controversy
Fourth World,
about that.
Oh, yeah. Fourth World puts out various titans like for all sorts of factions. Not all factions, because some of them don't actually have titans, like the Space Marines. But, there are Warhound Titans for the Imperial Guard. There are Wraith Lords, or Wraith Knights. That's for the Eldar. There are Hierophants for the Tyranids. There are
Stompas for the Orcs.
Yeah, Stompas for the Orcs.
There's a lot of stuff in it.
Yeah,
I personally haven't looked through the whole thing, but I know all of the Apocalypse units and just yeah, it just adds a lot to the game if you're just looking for a fun game.
There are super heavy tanks that are absolutely nuts and die within a couple turns because everyone targets them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing about Apocalypse games, is that you have these massive things, but they don't last long, because each one can basically kill off a large part of an army in a turn, or a large part of a normal 40k army in a turn. So in an Apocalypse game, they kill vast swaths of units, but they die in like two or three turns, because everyone focuses their fire on it. So it balances itself out.
Yeah, and then it becomes a normal, large game of 40k.
Unless you hide your shadow sword in a ruin and nobody can kill it, and it just sits back there bombarding things.
Yeah, that's so fun.
Yeah, that was annoying.
So
then you flank 100 orcs into the back of it.
Right.
Anyway.
So let's say you want to get into the game. You're just starting off. You want to know how much it's going to cost. Well, yeah.
Games Workshop
is very
has a great starter set for this game. We've mentioned it before. It's called Dark Vengeance. You can find it on their website or in most stores.
Now, really quick disclaimer. This is a very expensive hobby.
Yeah.
If you're getting into it and you're actually going to get serious about it, you're going to spend copious amounts of dollars or euros or whatever it is you use to buy things. Seashells, even.
A typical army can run up between, I think, the cheapest one I could make at 1,500 points was $250, and that was specifically designed to be the cheapest army I could make. But
that's not including hypothetically,
the rule books. That's just the models.
Oh yeah, the rule book costs what, $75?
$75. But if you get Dark Vengeance, you get a small book with all the rules in it, and Dark Vengeance itself is $100. It comes with two armies, Chaos Space Marines and Dark Angels.
They're not balanced.
They're not that bad. They're 200 points difference. One is 506, the other is 700, and what was it? 705. But, so you could probably take out a unit and have two balanced lists. They are two legal armies, though. There is a force organization chart that you need to follow if you're building an army list. We'll get into that later. But
really quick. It's a really quick thing.
Okay.
The basic one is one HQ and two troop choices.
That's
with the optional.
That's your
minimum. Yeah, that's your minimum. With the optional extra HQ, two elites, three fast attack.
No, three elites. Three elites.
Oh, three elites.
Four troops.
Three
fast
four
attack,
troops.
And three heavy support.
Three heavy support.
They are also as with 6th edition, they also released another addition to that, which is the fortification slot, which are like they have bunkers, defense lines, that kind of stuff. And they released...
Yeah. Which, unfortunately, you also have to buy.
Yeah. And they released an allies slot, which is a separate force organization chart for allied detachments, which each army has its own rules of what can ally with it, and, some armies can't ally with each other, some armies can, but they don't exactly trust each other, so there are some rules for that. And then some armies can just ally and fight normally, but there's a whole separate force organization chart for that. And it's all in the rules.
No, we're really not going to get into the rules.
Yeah.
Because that would take a long time to explain.
Oh, yeah. It's a big rule book. But it's you can pick up Dark Vengeance and you'll get the smaller one, and it's not, once you play a game or so, you basically understand the rules. It's not that complicated. It's just there's a lot of it.
Now, he says this, but I still haven't figured out all the rules. There's a lot of math going on. You have to and you also have to remember certain charts, like you always roll dice to see if you hit and wound targets, and then that target will roll a die for each wound to see if they survive.
Yeah.
Now,
so you want to get into the phases of the game, of a basic game?
Well, no, we'll cover that later.
Okay.
We're getting into the hobby, but so you just need to know what hits, what wounds, stuff like that. And it gets a little overwhelming in the beginning.
Yeah.
Now, getting back to getting into the hobby, right? If you don't get Dark Vengeance, you're going to be spending maybe $300 or $400 getting in.
Yeah.
Right?
And remember,
because
Dark Vengeance only covers two armies. For those of you who want to start another army, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to...
Yeah.
Like, armies have bundles or battle forces, which some of them offer discounts. Some of them are actually more expensive than if you were to buy all the models separately, so I'd advise that you...
Always do the math.
Do your math
always
first.
Always do the math.
Yeah. That's one thing about buying from Games Workshop. Do the math first, because some of these bundles are more expensive than buying them all individually.
And one-click collections aren't actually bundles. It's basically saying, if you press this button, we're adding each and everything, all the things currently included in the one-click collection to your cart separately.
Right.
You don't have to go through and click each and every one. Now, as I said, the rulebook, $75. Okay? The codex, on average, is like 50 or so.
It depends on what edition codex you get. The newer ones, not all of them are updated to the newest edition. So some of them, like Space Wolves, Dark Eldar, Grey Knights, are still in 5th edition. But the rules work the same in 6th edition. Just you have to look up some of the rule changes and erratas on their website. But
And
those are like 30, maybe?
Yeah, 35.
35? Okay.
Yeah, 35. And then, the new ones, 6th edition, those are 50. The Space Marines Codex is 58, which is, it's about half the size of the big rulebook.
It's twice the size
of the normal codex.
It's 170 pages, something like that. Whereas a basic codex is maybe 105 or 104, something like that.
Yeah, so... But on top of that, you also need to get glue. If you're not getting Dark Vengeance, which has snap fit models, which I have,
you'd still want to glue
not
those. You'd still want to glue snap fit models.
Yeah, you still want to glue them, but like I don't really like the snap together models. But that's just personal opinion.
It's understandable. I said that's understandable.
Yeah. You need the glue, which is going to run you maybe $5 for a small bottle. And it's not Elmer's glue. You got to get super glue. Or plastic glue, but I honestly strongly suggest super glue so you don't have to discriminate against metal models, which are running out of style.
I use plastic glue, but that's because I don't build metal or resin models a lot.
On top of that, you need paint and paint brushes.
Yeah, remember...
Go ahead. Well, unless you just want to field a large army of gray, which honestly doesn't look that good.
There's nothing wrong
with
it.
From a gamer's perspective.
Yeah, it's annoying if you've put all your time and work into making an awesome-looking army, and then your opponent just shows up with a bunch of gray stuff. There are some people who don't like it, some people who don't really care. But
and if you want to go to a tournament, everything has to be painted up.
Yeah, most tournaments have like a 3-color minimum or something like that. Remember, this is a hobby. It's not just a game. So you do have to build and paint all the models and everything. So
there's a disclaimer at the bottom of every single page. And let me just bring one up so I can read it to you verbatim. It says... This kit is supplied unpainted and requires assembly, We recommend using Citadel paint glue and paint and Citadel paints. Little plug there. Personally, I don't like Citadel paint plastic glue. They say paint glue and then plastic glue. But the Citadel paints are really great.
Yes.
Like I have.
I exclusively use Citadel paints. I mean, I know there are better things out there, but
like it's just like there's a company that everyone pronounces the name a different way. I pronounce it Vallejo.
Vallejo.
Yeah. Or Vallejo, I've heard. It's V-A-L-L-E-J-O or something like that.
Something, I don't know. I don't
Their quality rivals Citadel paints, and also they have an airbrush safe range. So if you use an airbrush and you're really good at an airbrush, you go buy these paints and you just drop it right into the airbrush.
They are a little more expensive though, and
but the pots are bigger.
Yeah, but there's Vallejo is usually the stuff that you see a lot of the expert painters using everything, just because a lot of people like it better. I don't have a lot of experience with it, but I've heard things about it. Good things.
Yeah, I'm measuring one of my Citadel paint pots right now, and it the base comes at 1.25 inches, and then tall it's about 1.5 inches tall,
mm-hmm.
a little taller than that. So it's a really small pot for $4. Whereas the Vallejo paint, it's a little thinner but much taller, and it's just, you know, it. Like the quality is better, but it is a bit more expensive. Like it's like $7 or $8 a pot. But anyway, yes, this is a hobby. You have to assemble everything. You have to paint everything. Glue them to certain, very specifically sized bases. Now, luckily, the bases are supplied with the model in the box, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you know, if you're using a basic infantry model, that's a specific. I can't speak. A specific size. If you're using large infantry, again, specific size, and they all range, right?
Yeah, there's, hang on one second, I'm pulling up the base sizes. You've got 28 millimeter, it's a, the scale of the game is 28 millimeters. For, the, hang on, one second, where is it? I cannot find it. Just give me a second. But yeah, you've got the smaller size bases for basic infantry. I believe it's 28 millimeter.
No, it's 25 millimeter.
25 millimeter?
25 millimeter round bases.
Yes, round bases. Warhammer 40K uses round bases. Warhammer Fantasy uses square bases. So remember,
and the bases are a bit smaller. Those are 20 millimeter.
Yeah. Chaos Demons players, remember that if you're playing 40K, you're using the round bases. So, yeah, you've got that. Then the next size is 40mm base, which are your medium-sized creature. You got your Terminators, Tyranid Warriors, that kind of stuff. Some, a lot of characters.
I'm not really sure besides Crisis Suits from the Tau Empire.
Orc Meganobs. Orc Warbosses, that kind of stuff. Next you have your 60mm bases, which are large, monstrous creature. These are usually monstrous creatures, and Carnifexes,
like
broadsides, that kind of stuff. Then
and
you
then
have, I'm not sure the dimensions
the flight base.
Of it. You've got your flying
there's the,
bases.
It's called the flying base, or the flight base. It's something like
it's a large oval.
Yeah, it's a large oval. It's like 100 millimeters by 50 millimeters or something like that.
Somewhere
around there. Extremely wrong.
Those are normally used for flyers. However, they're more recently, there are a lot of monstrous creatures, like larger than normal monstrous creatures that use the 60
like
millimeter
the
bases.
There's the Tyranid of Moloch that uses it. There is the Tau Riptide. And then there's like
the Eldar Wraith Knight.
Yes, and
I don't think
there's something
any
that
more.
I mentioned. The Valkyrie. I'm just saying, like for flyers, there's the Valkyrie that uses it. It comes with a flight stand that you glue down.
Dread Knight, that was it. That's the other walker.
Oh, yeah, the Dread Knight.
The other monstrous creature that's on that base. Yeah, so there are, like, four of them that actually stand on it, and then the rest are flyers. But, yeah. So, yeah, those are the base sizes.
Wasn't there one more?
Oh, we've got the flying bases. Flying bases are... There's... I'm not sure of the exact size. They're larger than normal bases, but they're basically clear plastic bases. There's a small one and a larger one. The larger one's about...
The small one's like 30 centimeters or something like that.
Something.
And the, sorry, 30 millimeters, not 30 centimeters.
Something. And then the larger one is about 60, but it's a little bit less. I haven't measured it exactly, but...
Probably somewhere around like 56, 55... Mm-hmm.
And those are basically used for, like, your models that are, like, skimmers and stuff. Stuff that flies. Yes. It doesn't...
Stuff,
it's not...
stuff that's always flying.
It doesn't always fly, but it just, like, hovers off the ground. That kind of stuff.
Yes. So your Tyranid drones, all of your drones will be on these small clear bases.
Your
land... Although you could put them on...
Space Lance Raiders, that kind of stuff. Or
yeah,
land, no, not Land Raiders.
What else? Orc Defcoptos.
Yes. All jet bikes use them.
Yeah.
Dark Eldar, Necrons, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And there are, believe it or not, there are some tanks from the Tau Empire that actually use large clear bases. Like the Hammerhead, I believe, uses it.
Yes.
It's really unstable, but yeah, it still uses it.
Tau, Eldar, and, Dark Eldar use flying bases for their vehicles.
Yeah, because they're cover vehicles, essentially.
Yeah.
Which,
they can look really cool. Especially the Dark Eldar ones, which have a ball joint so you can position the models to make it look like they're angled or something, which I think is just awesome.
Right. So yeah, you're gonna have the bases. You gotta glue them down to those. You're hopefully painting everything. Paints are, as I said, $4 a pot. You're going to want to use at least 5 paints. At least.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're going to need at least one flesh tone, which is going to look really flat.
Well, probably yeah, Citadel black. Paints have, there's the base paint, layer, wash,
layer two.
And dry brush. And, it'll say on the pot... you don't have to use it for that, but that's the way, that's how you get good effects from it, is that you use those
right.
in order. And then...
Like, for example, the base paints are very limited in range. They're basically the general color, so there's going to be a green, there's going to be a brown.
They also
then
have
layers.
A higher, pigment in the paint.
Right, so it covers better.
Yeah.
And now the layers have a lot more range,
and they're
which
generally
is meant,
lighter colors.
Yeah, and they're meant to go on top of bases. So like a lighter red to go on top of your ordinary red base, or a lighter orange, you know, stuff like that. And then shades or washes, they're very watered down. They will get into cracks. They will create great shadowing effects or tint colors. So if you throw a green wash on the silver paint, it'll come out like a greenish silver,
mm-hmm.
I guess.
Yeah, I like the washes. A good wash, I think, can turn a bad paint job into a medium paint job, or a medium paint job into a good paint job. It just makes it look so much better, because it gives it nice shading and everything.
Yeah, and it also helps you do eyes. Eyes are
yes.
one of the hardest things to do in the very beginning of your career. Of being a hobby painter.
I still have trouble with them. I normally
yeah, so
don't
what,
paint eyes.
What you can do is you can, if you want like red eyes, just take a red wash, just dab some into the eye sockets and it will come out red.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
Or you could just do what I do and all your characters look like they're squinting because you just paint black lines there to make it look like shadows.
Yeah. So, you're going to spend, like, at least a minimum of $20 on paints. Then, on top of all of that, what are you going to put... What are you going to use to put the paint on your models?
Not
your fingers.
Citadel
it doesn't work
brushes,
that way.
Because those don't work.
Citadel brushes... Well, if you're using the How to Paint guide, Citadel brushes actually can come in handy, because the Citadel How to Paint Citadel Models guide really uses all of the measurements that Citadel paintbrushes use. Yes. So there's the monster, there's the small...
The dry brush, all sorts of stuff like wash, that kind of stuff, yeah. But
right.
In my opinion, they're very overpriced and really not worth it. They fall apart easily. But just my experience with them, and that no way reflects other people. Other people might have great experience with it. This is just me. So
right now, I'm currently using, and this is going to be a plug, a free plug, Lowell Cornell Soft Comfort Brushes. They are a little expensive, but their bristles are very durable, and it's exactly what I need. And for a little while, I also used Artist's Loft, which, you know, those are also pretty good for, like, beginner.
I recommend Army Painter, because it's a very good company, good reputation. I've had no trouble with their brushes.
Free plugs all around.
Yeah.
Yay.
Shameless plugs. All right.
Plug.
Yeah.
But the brushes do get up in cost. Like, you can find, like, if you were to go to your local craft shop, you can find a large set of brushes of varying size for like $20, which is probably what you should get if it's a small set, or the large set of small brushes, because you're not going to really use a 1-inch brush any time, except maybe painting a tank.
Yeah.
And that's really, you're really not going to. I have a couple of 1-inch brushes, and they're absolutely pristine. I don't use them at all.
Yeah.
So basically, that's like $45 for the absolute bare minimums, and that's not going to last you very long at all. So you're going to be spending like $80 on paints, brushes, and glue to start off. Remember that, because the cost gets up there, because you have to replenish your paint
So we're looking at about a minimum for starting an army, painting it. You're probably looking at a good $350.
Yeah, and that's for a small army, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or you can buy the Dark Vengeance and say, okay, fine, I'll play Dark Elves, or fine, I'll play Chaos Space Marines, or Dark Angels.
Yeah. Yeah. Different system.
Yep, different system. Or I'll play Chaos Space Marines, and just grin and bear it and save money.
Yeah.
Now, another thing I really ought to note, right? I had gotten misinformation from an anonymous source that the Strike Forces are overpriced, right? If you buy each of the sets separately, then you save money. That's not the case. I did the math on the Space Marine Strike Force, which has a pretty good spread of stuff, right? It's $225, for the Strike Force, which comes with the Commander, Command Squad, Razorback, two Tactical Squads, a Venerable Dreadnought, a Drop Pod, an Assault Squad, and a squad of Scouts with Sniper Rifles. Now, this means absolutely nothing to you, but that's a really well-rounded army. Okay? Altogether, separately, that's $320. Or you can save $95 and buy them as a Strike Force.
That's just the Space Marine Strike Force. We obviously haven't done the math for every single bundle they have out there, but...
Yeah, definitely do that before
definitely
you buy
do your math, yeah, because
workshop.
You might end up paying more than buying them all separately.
Also, here's a pro tip. eBay. If you...
Yes, definitely eBay.
eBay, you can buy bits separately. So you can buy, like, if you're looking for a Necron torso or a Tyranid leg, right, you'll be able to go on eBay, type that in, and get it. You can get squads for a couple dollars cheaper, and, saying it's a couple dollars cheaper is something big, because seeing as you're spending hundreds of dollars, a couple dollars in the long run actually will amount to maybe $10, $15 that you can spend on paint, or food.
Now, as to the price of the game, I know it's a deterrent for a lot of people. We've seen a lot. I know a lot of my friends who want to start the game, but they're looking at the price going, I can't afford this. What I will say is that the models don't go out of date. You can buy an army, spend $300, $400 on an army, but I'm still using armies that I used 7 years ago.
Well, that would be the case if you don't play Necrons.
Sure, things change. You get new units and names change, but the models themselves, for the most part, stay the same.
But again, there was a big thing that one of the people I played against, he played Necrons. He had mentioned after...
I think I know who you're talking about, right?
Yeah. He had made his own Necron units, and they were to spec. They were kit-bashed from a bunch of different stuff lying around the house. Because, you know, he didn't want to spend all that much money on the hobby. And then the new Codex came out for Necrons, and one of the models is now an entire inch taller.
Yeah.
So he couldn't use the models he had made. He actually had to buy the new models or make new ones.
Well, it depends on your opponent's preference. Personally, I would let him use it because, for the most part, if you're playing a casual game, it's not a huge issue being an inch or so taller. In competitive games, you would have to speak with a judge or something before actually participating, but for the most part, it's not a problem.
Alex,
yeah,
I think you're a little confused. The new models are an inch taller.
Yeah, that's what I said.
So his models were an inch shorter, and when it comes to my measuring of line of sight, that inch is actually a big difference.
I know, but I'm just saying.
So yes, the opponent will be like, oh yeah, you can use your short model, but that's because it's at a disadvantage for the Necron player.
But you also said it was kit-bashed, right?
Well, it looked genuinely like the model, right? Mm-hmm. It really did look a lot like the original model,
yeah.
The official model.
Yeah.
But, you know, he did make a bunch of pieces from, like, some piping.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he saved money, and that's really hard to do in this hobby sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, it's easy, but it's hard. You need to...
Yeah, I see what you're saying, but what I'm basically saying is that your army is not going to go out of date. You might have to spend some money, buy some new units, or you might want to buy some new units, you might want to change some of your units around, but your army as a whole is going to be fine. Except for squats.
Yeah. Except for squats.
But we don't talk
about
them.
I was literally just about to say that. Really quick thing about squats. Now, we're gonna talk about squats.
Yeah.
Squats are one of the hardest armies to build / find, seeing as they were only in there for, what, one or two editions?
I don't even know.
Basically, squats are space dwarves. They were like space marines, but they were dwarves. So, you know, was it Scottish dwarf?
I'm not really sure. I know they were removed from the game because they just couldn't really find a place for them in the game.
Right, because their place was already being taken by space marines.
No, their place was not... It wasn't so much that it was taken, it was just so much that the... From what I heard, the authors found them a bit ridiculous, so they wrote the fluff into being that the race got eaten by Tyranids.
Yep, but they were one of the first victims of the Tyranids.
Until Dan Arnett brought one of them back as a rogue trader, I think, the Ravenor or Eisenhorn series, it was one of those two, which was awesome, by the way.
But those are books, and I don't really read the books, so I have no clue what he's talking about.
There was a squat in one of them.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Like genuinely, that's like it's a nice thing to do, right? Even though it's a fictional character, still.
Yeah.
Still,
I've seen some pretty good squat, like Imperial Guard counts as Imperial Guard armies. which again, in this game, you're allowed to do because conversion and that stuff is a huge aspect of the hobby and really encouraged by Games Workshop and everyone else.
Well, you say it's encouraged by Games Workshop.
It is.
But funny thing,
just Games as long Workshop, as you use their pieces to convert.
No, if you're going to do a Games Workshop tournament, like an official Games Workshop tournament, you have to use official Games Workshop models.
Yes, as long as you use their pieces, conversions are highly encouraged in their tournaments. But since Games Workshop really doesn't run tournaments in the United States, or that a lot of people want to go to from what I've heard, basically Games Workshop has kind of given up on the tournament scene. They say they don't write their rules to be competitive at all, and that's become a problem recently.
Well, this newest edition of rules is literally made for competition. Or sort of. I actually haven't read through it, but
yeah,
I've heard
it's actually less of a tournament game than in 5th edition. They want their game to be like, let's grab a beer, play some 40k, or that kind of stuff.
Don't drink beer, kids. We're not endorsing alcohol.
I'm using actual quotes from authors of like Games Workshop and stuff. They want their game to be like a beer and pretzels kind of game where you just pick up a game with a friend, and they want a really narrative kind of battle, whereas a lot of the tournament organizers and everything I know have a problem with this because they're releasing a lot of unbalanced stuff. The game is not very well balanced at all.
Like Blood Angels. They are not balanced at all.
Yes.
Whatsoever.
If you're looking for a game with a good rule set that's balanced and everything, this is not that game. This is a game that you play because it's fun. And because the story is awesome and you want like a really narrative game.
This is a game for fun. It's but the problem is a lot of people take it seriously. I know of at least two players at our joint local LGS that are so incredibly competitive that they bend the rules to their furthest extent to win, and it's not very fun for anyone except them.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna mention any names because, yeah. We do not want a lynch crowd going out going, "Oh, I'm going to kill everyone that cheats or bends the rules."
Yeah, but it's not a competitive game, but it is a fun game, and it is one of my favorite games. So, yeah.
Yeah, like, personally, I enjoy the game because it can be quite ridiculous at sometimes. Like, you know, and people make their own codices, that's the plural. For example, the one of the most famous ones are the Movie Marines, which are space marines that appear in movies and video games. Huh?
I love the Movie Marines. They're great.
Essentially, the Movie Marines are based off of every single action movie stereotype. So there's the one guy with the huge weapon that kills everything, like Rambo.
They're space marines as they're supposed to be. In the fluff, not as they actually own the game. In the game, a Space Marine army is an actual army. With Movie Marines, a Space Marine army is 10 guys in a tank.
Yes. And they are absolutely ridiculous. And one of the things...
Surprisingly balanced, too.
Right. And it's one of the most balanced armies. Which is ridiculous.
Of the most balanced armies, but if you're playing... Let's say you're playing a 1,500 point game, which I guess we should also get into point costs too, because each model costs a certain amount of points, and then you give them equipment, which is another certain amount of points, and level before the game begins.
Yeah, like a base Space Marine costs 14 points, like one single Space Marine.
Yeah. Let's try not to mention point cost too much though, because we might get in trouble for that. But anyway,
I don't think we will.
Yeah, I've heard.
I don't want to risk Tate and Murphy, but yeah, I don't
we'll limit
think
it.
There's really much of a problem. Like, it's not our game. We didn't create it.
Yeah.
We're not sitting there and saying, oh yeah, we came up with this, it's a great game. No, we'd be rich and we wouldn't be doing this.
Yeah, I've just
if
heard
we, if we created
they've given people trouble for doing that, so but anyway, yeah, so you agree on the point level beforehand, but a squad of five movie marines is probably a 1,000-point list, something like that. Not that much, but
yeah, somewhere. No. Remember, I had a 6
oh, yeah. So,
man army, and it was like 850 points.
Yeah, if you're playing a 1,500-point game, you might have a horde on one side, like a horde of orcs or something, versus 10 space marines and a tank. And
right, and like,
yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's really,
so,
it's not like a competitive thing. It's more if you're looking for like a really last stand kind of cinematic game. I really recommend using the rules from Movement Marines.
Right. Now, you mentioned that horde, and now we have to do a talk about it. Armies are they fall into like two or three subcategories. There are the horde armies, the elitist armies, and I think there's probably one more somewhere in between, but I'm not really sure. So elitist armies are very
armored
low model
is
count.
What you're thinking of?
Oh yeah.
You've got horde, elite, and armored. And
right. So
these are not actually official categories or anything. This is just how we're classifying them.
Well, some wargamers do as well. We're not the only ones.
Yeah.
So elite armies are very low model count. You might field 50 guys, including tanks, right? And that's it.
Yeah.
And it's very little work to paint them up, very little work to, assemble them all, stuff like that. And, for example, the Space Marines are very elitist. So, they have, like, if you field 10 models on an average group, right, or, like, an average squad, and, if you lose one, that's a lot of firepower. But it will trade for a lot more guys. Right, whereas a horde army, you're fielding 200 units around there. Sorry, 200 models.
Yeah, my orc army in a small game, just for troops alone, has 100 models in it. So this is it's also a very expensive army, because you're going to have to buy 100 models for your troops there.
Yeah, but luckily they come in, what, groups of 20?
Mm-hmm. No,
yeah.
Groups of 10.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Boxes of 10?
It's $25
for
a box of 10. Yeah.
Oh, well, it's
$25. It took me a while to build it up, though. But anyway...
That's $250 of troops.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one is armored, which is a lot of tanks.
Imperial Guard,
like,
Tau,
yeah, like
that
the Imperial
kind of
Guard.
Stuff.
I have a Tau army that doesn't actually have any tanks whatsoever.
Yeah.
And that's probably why I lose all the time. But that's not the point.
But, yeah. Now, these categories don't necessarily apply to a specific army. I think every army, except for Tyranids, can have armor. Every army can have a horde. Every army can
right.
have, like, a elite unit. Well, most armies. Not every army, I'm not going to say that.
Right.
But units that are more elite than the rest of the army. Although, if you're playing something like Orcs or Tyranids, your elite units are still going to be... are still going to look like a horde.
But, yeah, and like, for example, Tyranids, they don't have any tanks.
Yeah.
They have monstrous creatures.
Yeah.
So, you're fielding something like 50-man units for troops. You've got three or four of those.
Mm-hmm.
And the models are very cheap, like 4 points each or so. Or so. Might be wrong.
Basically,
then.
The whole thing behind hordes is that, and this is the tactic that I use, is you just have so much stuff that if your opponent looks across the board and asks, how am I going to kill all of that, you've already won half the game. Because
yeah, and
your stuff is going to die quickly, but you have more of it to replace that until you actually reach them.
Right. Now, that's another thing, right? Victory conditions. What do we need to do to win the game? There are six missions, or so.
Each one is some varying degree of victory points, which are you get points if you get capture an objective or kill your enemy's warlord or something like that.
Right. And, like, you know, it's really either, you know, it comes down to two things. Capture the flag or annihilation. Deathmatch, right?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's, you know, so people really don't use the missions all that much.
Or you could just play how we play, me and Dan, and you just play the game until you reach five turns or you wipe your opponent off the board. And
which,
no victory condition, really. It's just whoever destroys the most stuff.
Right. Now, one of the unofficial ones is who has the largest death pile.
Yeah.
And whoever has the largest death pile wins. So you just throw hordes upon hordes of things at your opponent. If they die, you're just getting closer and closer to victory.
This really only works for horde against horde, though, because if you're doing a horde against elite army, you're going to have a larger death pile if you're playing horde.
Yeah, and it's like it's supposed to be the fun, not non-competitive.
Yes.
Game.
Also,
right?
I'm not condoning throwing your models that you took time and effort to paint into a giant pile. So,
it's not a literal
pile; it's a figurative like pile.
No, I've got piles of models before, but that's because I seal them with clear coat, which
I don't
really
do that.
Is a lifesaver. Huh?
It dulls the paint on mine, so I don't do that.
Well, it depends on what clear coat you use.
Yeah.
Like, I use a scenic cement, a very generic scenic cement, which is, since it's made for, like, train scenery or, you know, like, model train scenery, stuff like that, it will seal all of the colors, and it'll dry absolutely clear. And it's, you know, it leaves the model looking really nice, and, you know, you just have to sometimes brush a bit of dust off of them every now and then if you don't play that often. And it's, you know, it really protects the model. Like, one of my models I've dropped, like, 18 times on the floor, and it's come up with no chip paint whatsoever. I've had to bend pieces back, but that's about it.
Yeah.
So. What are you searching over there?
Hang on, I'm just doing some. Anyway.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, that is basically Warhammer 40K. I mean, we've talked about the rules.
Quickly,
and stuff.
Right into a wrap-up.
Hmm?
I said quick, leap right into a wrap-up. Yeah.
Well, yeah, we're reaching our time limit here, so
we don't want to take up too much of your time. I mean, like, yeah, you could be doing other things, because this is just a podcast. You're just listening to us speak, and then suddenly pictures flash and you miss it, and you're just like, oh. No, it's just a podcast. Just listening to us. What's it called? Yeah, that's essentially the game. That's the company.
Yeah.
There's one thing you should note. Games Workshop doesn't actually like create the game; they publish it. So they will resell the models that Citadel puts out. And resell the paint that Citadel puts out, and they will publish the rule books that other authors use or create. I suck at them. So it's not like, you know, it's not Games Workshop's game or Games Workshop's models. Like that, you know, they consider them official models, yeah. But I have no idea why I said that.
Well, Games Workshop is the company. The models are created by various parts of the company, but it still is the Games Workshop company.
I'm still not sure why I brought that up. It has absolutely no...
And we can always cut that out.
Yeah, nah.
Okay. Anyway, this is our first episode of Buckets of Dice. We haven't really decided too much on our schedule yet. We're probably going to be doing, like, once or twice a month. But,
Really, it's just bi-whenever-ly.
Yeah. Yeah, we really haven't figured anything out yet. We just started recording
this. We're two blokes in college. We're really not going to have much time on our hands. But when we do, if we have corresponding time slots, we'll record.
Yep.
But, yeah. Also, pardon the audio quality. Currently, we don't have like super high tech equipment, like condensing room standing microphones and stuff like that.
Again, we're broke college students.
College students.
Yeah. So yeah, I think next episode we're probably going to go into an RPG game or Warhammer Fantasy, which is another Games Workshop game, which
we're gonna keep this traditional physical games. We might start up another podcast talking about video games, but I'm not sure about that.
We'll see about that.
Because video games are more visual than this, right? If you're talking about a video game, you can't just say, oh yeah, so-and-so video game has really great graphics. That could be an opinion, but you can't tell without pictures. So,
yeah.
Whereas with this, you can say, it's just, you can look up pictures, it's fine.
But anyway, more stuff, we still have to make a website and everything, and got a lot of work to do.
So if any of you listeners somehow managed to listen to this because we figured out how to post it without using a website, and you're willing to make a website for us, we aren't going to turn that down.
Yeah. Also, if you have a better name than our name right now,
Buckets of Dice.
Because this is just...
That's not taken.
Yeah, Buckets of Dice is the name we're using. It might not be the name that we're going to stick with.
And if you know a podcast that's called Buckets of Dice that's not us, tell us. We'll apologize to them somewhat formally, maybe a bit informally, because that's just how we are. And then we'll change our name the next episode. Because it's not like we can retcon the rest of the episodes, because that's kind of a bit of a bug.
But anyway, for now, this is Buckets of Dice, and we'll see you guys next time.